At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 309. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, I want to start out by actually asking you a question. Would you like to trade back Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom? You guys need the hitting.
Hard pass, because I don't think Grissom's hitting either. So we will take ace level Chris Sale, because he's really been the best player on the Braves. Maybe outside of Marcell Ozuna, Sale has been one of the best players for sure. He looks like vintage Chris Sale, ace level production. Hopefully he just stays healthy all year. That's all we need.
Yeah, it's always the big question with him. But yeah, he's looked phenomenal, and he dominated us. No, he did. I heard his message to Red Sox fan. Thank you, and I'm sorry. You got to love how the guy carries himself. Like, he's a class act, dude. People can say all they want about the cutting up of the uniforms. And yeah, he had a moment there, but he seems like a really good dude and really holds himself accountable when he's not performing. So yeah, definitely miss Chris Sale, and he's one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. But we're not talking Chris Sale today, or anybody even remotely close to Chris Sale. We're doing a first quarter or so of the season rookie review. Look at some of the top rookies that have debuted so far, how they're doing, what we think of them moving forward, if our long-term outlooks have changed. A nice free-flowing discussion with all these names here. What a fun names, obviously. A lot of top prospects have already debuted so far this year, both hitting and pitching. So a lot of fun names. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us. And obviously, yeah, go check out everything over at RotoBaller. So much great content, tools, and more to help you win and have fun this fantasy season. Use that code TOOLSHED, get your 10% off a checkout on any premium package over at rotoballer.com. So let's start with pretty much almost everyone's number one heading into the year, Wyatt Langford. You know, still barely prospect eligible thanks to a silver lining of his hamstring injury, which he's about 2.5 weeks into the recovery of that. Maybe he's back early part of June or so. That we get to one more set of rankings with Langford at number one for me, but it wasn't really doing a whole lot, though, before the injury, slashing 224, 295, 293, one home run and one steal in 129 plate appearances. But, Chris, the metrics across the board, like, he was damn close to league average almost everywhere. Quality of contact, barrel, 6.8 EV, about 88 miles an hour, hard hit 38.5%. Look at the contact rates, zone 83.3%. Actually had a better-than-league-average chase rate, better-than-league-average contact rate. He's actually 80.1% contact. This is an instance where the metrics don't really line up with the surface production. And, yeah, that one home run was inside the park. Honestly, my thought process has not changed on Langford. He's still my number one. That's where he was preseason. I'm still, thinking he's going to be a first-round fantasy guy at some point in his career. And yeah, hasn't been quite as good as we hope so far, but my thought process has not changed one bit on Wyatt Langford.
Yeah, neither am I. Langford is going to be a really good player for a really long time. And I think what we'll see as we go through these names is that it's hard to step into Major League Baseball and perform. In Wyatt Langford's case, he was drafted a year ago, not even a year ago at this point. And we saw him ascend rapidly last year after the draft. He obviously was up opening day. The results were subpar. When you look on the surface, you obviously want to see a lot more than everything below 300, average OBP and slug included. But Langford, I thought, did some good things. I think he held his own. How long was he playing injured? We don't know. It's possible that he may have tweaked the hammy a little bit before. But I will say that I think Langford bounces back and is fine. You look at the quality of contact, the EVs. This is never who he's been. He's always hit the ball extremely hard. He's done it with really good contact. You look and his sprint speed's actually really good. 97th percentile sprint speed. So shows that he's capable of running. I think that Langford, hopefully upon return, gets things going. I don't know. Do you think they option him? Like he does rehab and then he stays down kind of thing? Or you think he just comes back up and is good to go?
That's a good question, because I think there's some people questioning before he got injured, are they going to send him down soon? What happened with Jackson Holliday in Baltimore? And I think those were legit questions, but I don't know. I think I'm trying to pull up, see who's been starting regularly. I know like Tavares had a little bit of a hot streak, like the last week. Yeah, Tavares been starting every day in center field. Right field's been Derek Hill the last three games. And then Carter's been on left, but he's also not starting against lefties at all, which is discouraging. I think just given this outfield, I think he does come back and re-enter the lineup. I think maybe if Carter wasn't having issues against lefties and they weren't running out Derek Hill in right field, or today it was Travis Jankowski, who I keep forgetting still exists. But yeah, I think they do, but he definitely needs to get it going here. But again, the metrics aren't bad. Like we just talked about him. But actually, again, right around league average, or there's more metrics that are above league average than below league average. And I think quality of contact, no issues there. Like we saw what he can do in spring training. Yeah, the quality of opponent wasn't as good, obviously, but this guy still has all the talent in the world, and I have not moved him from my number one spot and don't plan on it. He's going to be there until he graduates sometime in June, hopefully. But next one here, Jackson Holliday, really struggled in his debut, his first cup of coffee with Baltimore before getting sent back down. Looking at a guy in 36 plate appearances, did not record an extra base hit, hit 059, 111, 059, and struck out in exactly 50% of his plate appearances. And then since being sent back down to AAA Norfolk in late April, 22 games back down, 226, 398, 357 slash line, 2 home runs, as many walks as strikeouts, 3 steals as well. So he's still, he doesn't look quite right now. He's not really driving the ball like we were seeing him do in spring training and near the end of last year. Obviously, still getting on base a ton. Even when he's struggling, he's running an OBP right around 400. But what are your thoughts now on Holliday, Chris?
I think that when a hitter like Holliday comes up and struggles as bad as he did, it shows you really how hard the game is, because this is one of the best pure hitters in the minors. 20 years old. So, again, it's a hard jump to make. My opinion hasn't changed a bit on Jackson Holliday. When we look under the hood, especially in AAA, it was ugly in the majors. We won't talk too much about the underlying StatCast data and his 36 major league plate appearances, but I will say he's been pretty solid from an exit velocity contact standpoint in AAA. And I think that, honestly, like, he may stay down for a while. I think everybody thinks he's just going to come right back up. But I think the Orioles are going to wait for him to get on an absolute heater, get all his confidence back, and make sure that he's more than ready when he does return. I think they're going to want him to be on like another level of confident, like coming off a super hot streak. Because, he's been up and down. In the month of May, he's yeah, not hit so great. 213, 398 OBP, though. So that is encouraging with three home runs. Yeah, the contact is interesting. The contact numbers have been, yeah, fine. 73% overall, 80% in zone, which, yeah, you'd like to see better. They were much better last year. The chase rate's really good at 18%. That shows the kind of approach that we're, you know, talking about here, a really elite plate approach. But the exit velocities continue to be good. And I think with Holiday, you look at him, you're like, he's not going to hit the ball that hard. But he did last year. He was 91 mile an hour average last year and like a 102.90. This year, it's 90 mile an hour average and a near 104 ninth percentile, getting some upper end, higher exit velocities, at least on the upper end. The average EV is, or the average launch angle is not great. I think he's hitting the ball on the ground a little bit too much. It's hurting him some. But at the end of the day, I still think Holiday's extremely good. He'll be fine long term. I'm not particularly worried about him, but my opinion hasn't changed, and it shows you how hard the game really is.
Yeah, when even the can't miss guys that have 70 grade hit tools or all the skills in the world come up, it's a hard game. And they're facing the best quality pitching in the world, and it shows. Sometimes they can't hit the ground running, but more often than not, they don't. That's why we've always been hesitant or more conservative with prospects in redraft, because yeah, they'll get it going eventually, but sometimes it's a rocky road here, and we're seeing that, you know, in their first year so far with guys like Langford and Holiday and others. But I think another thing that Holiday has going for him, obviously, is, you know, the ability to just bounce ideas and thoughts off his borderline Hall of Fame caliber father, you know, a guy that was a 7-time All-Star, former MVP, batting title, World Series champion. Matt Holiday didn't struggle in his debut. He hit 290, but obviously just having a guy like that, that he can be, hey, dad, what do you think about this? That must be just like a phenomenal resource. And obviously, and his little brother, too. This is like a baseball family. So, yeah, definitely must be great to be able to, you know, talk to somebody like that, your own father, when you're going through a slump and see what he has to say about it. So, yeah, not worried about Holiday at all. He's still going to be one of the better hitters in baseball. It's not a matter of when. It's just a matter of if. It's a matter of when. That's really what I'm thinking here. Next up here, guy that debuted last year and hasn't really played in the majors this year, but Junior Caminero, we wanted to throw him in here because hitting very well. Falling off a little bit lately, but you're overall hitting, was it 279, 343, 500 with 7 home runs in 30 games for AAA Durham. And he's getting a little bit of second base in. He played there Tuesday and Wednesday of last week, which is really exciting. I'm like, all right, maybe they're trying this to get his bat in the lineup quicker. And then it stopped. He went back to third base, DH a couple times. Then he played there again yesterday. So I'm not sure exactly, you know, what the plan is there, like how heavily they're going to go to that. But it just shows, I think, that they want to try to get his bat in the lineup. Brendan Lowe's back, but for how long? He's always hurt, it seems like. And just getting that flexibility with Caminero, it's going to be huge, because imagine, obviously, he was already a phenomenal prospect and a guy that could probably, you know, become a top five, top three fantasy third baseman if everything clicks. But imagine this kind of profile, Chris, at like second base. He could be the number one second baseman. You've been up there with Jackson Holliday and, you know, Ozzie Albies, and, you know, Mookie Betts is over at shortstop now. Maybe he moves back. But this is a guy that literally could be the number one fantasy second baseman with this type of power. I don't know. Do you think, like, how much are you reading into this move second base? You think there's some smoke there, or you think it's just an experiment?
I think that at least they want to give it a run and see. Maybe it's not permanent, but why not? The corners are locked down, at least for a little while. You've got Isak Paredes. You've got Yandy Diaz. I think Diaz is under contract for another, like, this year plus next, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to look and confirm that. Yeah, he's through 2025 and a 2026 club option. Yeah, he's sticking around through 2026 most likely. So they've got to find a way to get him in the lineup. And I think this is a creative way to see if it can work. And maybe it doesn't. But worst case, he goes back to third. I don't think he's a shortstop. I will say that pretty confidently, that I don't think he can play short in the majors. But maybe second? It's worth at least trying. Like you said, Brandon Lyle's not bringing a ton to the table. So why not give it a run and at least see? Worst case is he comes up, he rotates time, you give Diaz and Paredes some days at DH. I'm thinking that it's probably a case where he hasn't been called up because the AL Rookie of the Year race is still wide open. He could come up today and still win it. And if he does, he gets a year of service time. The Rays get nothing. Currently, Mason Miller is the odds-on favorite to win Rookie of the Year. Not saying he's undeserving, but Mason Miller could blow out his arm tomorrow. Colton Cowser, Evan Carter, like those guys haven't really done enough to secure it. Caminero could come up and just blow this race away, 100%. So I think, and it's sad we even have to think about it because this is the negative side of the prospect promotion incentive, is that you know, the Rays gain nothing now. Caminero has everything to gain. The Rays have nothing to gain. So I think that's a factor for sure. But power's elite. It's 93-mile-an-hour average EV. It would be 15th best among MLB hitters. 9th percentile of 108.3 would be 19th best among MLB hitters. The zone contact rate's pretty impressive. 86.4% for a hitter like Caminero. I'd say I'll take that all day long. Yeah, I think it's impressive what he's done so far. I think he's ready, and I think it's just a matter of time before we see him. Maybe it's at second, maybe it's at third, maybe it's at DH. I don't really know, but I do think he's going to get time. I'll say that it's by the beginning of June.
Yeah, it's just not going to be shortstop. I think we both definitely agree there that this he's not a shortstop. Second base, you don't need quite as much range, obviously, as you do at shortstop. So I could see him being fine there, passable. Guys like Nolan Gorman have done it, so I think Caminero could. And, you know, Caminero is basically Gorman's power with a lot more contact. So I would love to see him at second base. But, yeah, just speak on the American League Rookie of the Year running. I just pulled up WAR for rookies. So number one, number two in WAR in the American League, you're Colton Cowser and then Willy Abreu. They're at 1.8, 1.5 respectively. Then there's a bunch of National League guys. But these are the third, fourth, and fifth guys in rookie WAR for the AL. Ready for this? Wenciel Perez, Davis Schneider, and Kyle McCann. That's three, okay. Four, and five for WAR. Yeah, it's WAR, I get it. But even the, and then six and seven, there's DeLuco, who's barely played. And then Austin Wells, who really has sucked. So that's the – and then Tyler, and then you got Corey Lee. It's pretty bad. Then you get down to, oh, there's Evan Carter. I know it's not the AL, but, oh, there's Jackson Churio. It's – yeah, one of the top guys have struggled. And speaking of Jackson Churio, a good segue into him. I know he just graduated from prospect status about a week or so ago, but he has been – the power of speed has been there, at least on the surface. He's got some home runs and some steals so far, which is – helping ease the blow. That slash line's 209, 258, 324 to go along with five home runs and seven steals. Strikeout rate 27.5%, a little high, not terrible. Ground ball rate is a little high. He's over 50% ground ball rate as well. But just he's too aggressive. He always has been, and you see that right now. Now the swing rate's only 52%. That's not terribly high, but first pitch swing rate's about 39%, and that's nearly 10% above league average. But zone contact still near league average. So the metrics aren't terrible under the hood, but he's the one where I'm starting to wonder, Chris, do you think Churio gets a mental reset here in AAA soon if he doesn't start turning things around?
I do think it's a real possibility. Even though they signed him to the extension, I still think there could be a possibility that he does just need the confidence boost. And again, I'm not surprised. We're talking about somebody that just turned 20 before the year started. And I think I remember talking about this on an episode before the season. We said that if Churio hit what 240 and he did something like 18 homers and 20 stolen bases, would you be happy? And I think the answer for most people would be no. But that was a reasonable expectation for a 20-year-old Churio coming up. And so far, five homers, seven stolen bases. Yeah, really not a lot to love under the hood. His bat speed's good. It's about the best aspect that he's got going on. He's got good sprint speed. He's provided pretty good value in the field. That's been his saving grace, that he has provided some good value out there in the outfield. I do think that things will turn around, but the struggles against breaking balls and off speed are pretty significant. And this is exactly what he struggled with in the minors, and that was something that I was a little bit concerned about and expressed that I didn't know how I would handle major league pitching early on, because the advancement in major league pitching is so much better than what he faced in Double A and Triple A to end last year. I think Churio Yeah, it'd probably be fine long term. My expectations haven't changed. Like, he's not taking a hit in my dynasty rankings or anything of that matter. But I do think that maybe it is time for him to get a little reset in AAA just to get his confidence back, beat up on some quad A pitching, and jump back up to the majors and get things going.
Yeah, it just makes me wonder, and this is something I thought of before he debuted as well, just like, where's the average wind up long term? Is he a 240 guy? Is he 260, 270? Everyone has those questions about Ellie, and yeah, Ellie's issues are more pronounced, but Churio has some of the same issues, especially with his aggression. So still questioning, is he just a 250 guy long term? Yeah, he'll still have the power and the speed. We've seen that from him throws. So that'll keep him pretty high in rankings, but maybe is he more of a top 50 guy than a top 25 guy? That's kind of where it's just some of the questions. I'm not dropping down my rankings or anything like that, but some of the questions I have right now is maybe he's more like a tier two or three guy as opposed to a guy that's pushing first round value or something like that. But you know, the other one I just mentioned here, Evan Carter, 5 home runs, 2 steals so far in 155 plate appearances, but a 197, 284, 380 slash line. And just not, as I mentioned, not playing against lefties. And this year, when he did play against lefties, he had 29 plate appearances, 0 extra base hits, hitting 111 with a 172 OBP, 1 walk to 10 strikeouts. I'm starting to wonder, the fact that they just don't want to play him right now against lefties, is he a strong side platoon bat? I think it's too early to say yes, he is, but I think it's at least a question right now of, is that a possible future for him? And I think there's still a good amount of talent here. He's still showing an advanced approach to the plate, and that's a guy that does not chase much at all. Pretty solid contact rates as well. He's still walking at a 10% clip. K rates, 26%, and that's not too bad, but better than league average zone. Contact better than league average overall, but just not getting it done and then not playing against lefties. So some concerns I do have. I'm not, you know, hitting the panic button yet with Evan Carter, but again, have some questions right now. But I don't know. What are you reading into this, Chris? Are you thinking there's something here with this him not playing against lefties at all thing, or do you think it's more so them sheltering him right now as a rookie?
I think it's probably more the sheltering aspect. He's still young, 21 years old. So it's a team that's coming off a World Series win. They don't have to run out Carter every day. Like, they've got all the talent. And not Carter was part of that run, but this is a talented team across the board. And I think that right now, like, the best thing for the Texas Rangers is to shield him against lefties. Because when you think about a young player, like, they want this guy to contribute all season. And the worst thing that can happen is you throw him out there against lefties and he gets eaten alive and destroys his confidence. You talk about the confidence thing with Churio, he maybe needs a reset, but they don't want that for Carter. They want Carter to be able to stick all year. And I know the results have not been all that great anyway, but I do think that for the mental state, for the numbers, for all those things, all the reasons, I think they could give a good reason why they're shielding against lefties. It's worked for guys. I mean, the Rays shielded Josh Lowe against lefties last year, and it worked. Yeah. Could Carter be a similar type? Maybe. But at the end of the day, you want him playing every day. I think that this is going to be something to watch over the next couple of years. This year, maybe not so much, but I do think it's something to monitor if he is becomes a platoon type guy. It is strong side, yes, but I do think that, yeah, I want to see a little more before I declare him and give him that label.
Yeah, no, it's definitely too early for that. Would you put him in as a buy low right now? If you didn't have him, would you be going out trying to, you know, capitalize on these early struggles and the fact that his perceived value has probably taken a little bit of a hit?
I think it's a good at least time to go out and see what the cost would be. I think that maybe somebody's a little down on him. I've tried to buy in a couple spots. I'm sitting on him in a couple spots, like Highlander. But I think you at least check it out and see. Carter was not going to be the guy he was in the majors in 2023, but he's not going to be the guy he's been right now either. There's a nice in between for he's going to be a really solid player. So I do think it's a good time to at least check in and buy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I traded for him in the offseason in my home keeper league. I got him and I forget another player or draft, and that was a high draft pick, and gave up Bo Bichette, who, so that Carter hasn't really worked out so far, but neither has Bo Bichette, though he is turning it around lately. So it's kind of been a lose so far, which is weird to think about with that type of deal. But yeah, definitely still have high hopes for Carter, but just some questions that have arisen here the first month or so of the season. Next up here, Kyle Manzardo. Got off to a slow start as well, but picking it up lately, you know, starting to hit some doubles there. Still waiting for that first home run. He's 8-for-38 so far, 211, 250, and 342. A lot of hits on the left field line. Three of his doubles are right down the left field line. The other two were to center field here. So not a ton of data to go off of yet. What we do have is quality of contact, his round league average, hard hits a little low. He's not walking much at all, only 2.5% walk rate, which is a little odd for him, but again, very small sample size. But he's hitting a lot of balls in the air. Ground ball rate's very low, high fly ball and line drive rate, and zone contact's above league average as well. So still, you know, what we do have for data, again, small, but decent enough. So I still think Manzardo's going to get it going here. And I had a buddy reach out to me recently asking me, hey, is Manzardo going to get it going? And I'm like, yeah, I think he's – we've seen him, what we saw in 2022, 2023 AFL, and then earlier this year in AAA. That's pretty legit for Manzardo, and I think he's still going to be like a top 10 caliber first baseman. So if you have him right now, I'd still be holding for sure.
I tend to agree. I think Manzardo's going to be fine. I'm not – worried about the performance at all. In reality, like, this is a guy that makes a lot of contact. He has the higher floor. He's going to get to power. It may take him a little longer to get to that game power, just because hitting major league pitches out of the park, it's a lot different than hitting a AAA meatball out of the park. But I do think that he's going to have to swing a little more aggressively at these pitches that are over the heart of the zone. His meatball swing rate, which is pitches over the heart, is just 58% right now. League average is 76. So you want to see him swing a little more aggressively at those pitches in the heart of the zone. Otherwise, I think everything looks pretty good. You know, he's making good zone contact, much better than league average. His chase rate's well below league average. And I know we're talking small samples in the majors so far, but still, he's got a bigger sample than Holiday did in the majors at this point. So at least there's a little bit of data to go off of. I do think that things will come around. I think he's going to begin striking out less, walking a little more, putting more balls in play, and making some things happen. So my question is, will he get a long enough leash, or is he going to be heading back down soon? And I think that question's still to be determined. The encouraging thing is that he is on a, count right, 6-game hitting streak, which we'll take that as a positive. It's 4 straight games with doubles. That's pretty substantial. So yep, maybe he's turning things on and getting things going, because if you look back on May 14th, he was hitting just 130 with a 174 slug and a 200 OBP, and that has risen significantly over the last week, which, that's good. The guy's adjusting and making things happen.
Yeah, he's one of the better and more professional hitters in the minor leagues, and I think if there were a guy that would, he's the type of guy that I always say has a better – there's no guarantees ever, as we've seen. But guys like Manzardo have a better chance of hitting the ground running and not struggling, because they're such professional hitters, great eye at the plate, can pick up spin, put the ball in play, use the entire field, and keep the K rate in check. Those guys, well, they might not always be the flashiest guy compared to like a Langford or a Churio or whatever. These guys – often hit the ground running at a higher rate than the others. Yeah, I think he's going to get going. Maybe we're seeing him get it going right now. Like Chris mentioned, double in 4 straight games. And I'm very much a believer in what we've seen from him outside of 2023 regular season, when he had all the off-the-field stuff going on as well. So it definitely, if that price tag has come down at all, I mean, I would swoop in. It probably hasn't, because it's been such a small sample size in the major leagues, but still very high on Zardo. I think he's going to be, and not a stud, probably like a back-end top 10 fantasy first baseman for a long time. Next three here all came up in similar time frame, all outfielders. We got Joey Loprofito with Houston. We got Jordan Beck with the Rockies. And we got Andy Páez with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Páez started off like a man on fire. He hit the ground running, or slugging, I should say, and cranking home runs left and right, and has 5 so far in 135 plate appearances. But he started to struggle a little bit of late. You look at what he's done in the month of May. He's only hitting 200, 238, 333 in 80 plate appearances. and 29 strikeouts to 4 walks. So really coming back down to earth there. Both Loperfido and Beck started off slow, but Loperfido isn't playing a whole lot right now. It's kind of here and there, but he's hitting 333 with 1 home run, 1 steal so far. Beck, for the most part, outside of a handful of games, has struggled. Does have 2 home runs and 2 steals in 76 plate appearances, but a 187, 184. It's hard to have an OBP lower than your average. 187, 184, 307 slash line. And the last time I checked, he had not walked, and I'm believing that's still the case. Yep, still 0 walks in 76 plate appearances for Jordan Beck. So look at these three together, Chris. Obviously, Páez was the big riser earlier in the year. Which one, all three are struggling right now or just not playing? Are you worried about any of these guys, more confident in any of these three than the other? Kind of what are your thoughts on this trio here?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like every time Loperfido does something good, they just proceed to sit him.
I know, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why that is, because Loperfido's actually performed. I mean, he's hit. Yeah, that's been flashy, a homer and a steal, but he's produced at least when he's on the field. Not striking out too much. He's getting hits. He's getting on base. So I'm a bit confused as to what the Astros are doing, you know, with him. If you're going to just let him play at the end of the day, you look at Páez, and I think Páez is going to be really good long term. Yeah, he's going through a bump in the road right now, but you know, you look at the kind of underlying chase and whiff data, and it's not really who he's been for most of his minor league career. So I think he does bounce back. What is encouraging about Páez is he's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting the ball at ideal launch angles. So that's a bit of an encouragement for me. Jordan Beck was my biggest question mark anyway, given the fact that he did struggle with contact in the minors. And that's been exploited a little bit. The whiff rate is a little bit high, 68% contact. The 77.5% zone is, it's below average, but it'll play. And there's a little bit of chase there too. So I do think that some of that tightens up. But at the end of the day, I think Beck is probably the one I'm the most concerned about, just given his history of contact. And the other two have had actually pretty reasonable contact rates. Pai is having really good contact rates throughout the minors. Surprisingly, when you think about like a slugging outfielder type, he does make a good bit of contact.
If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Yeah, I'm concerned that they're all just not going to be playing much moving forward, especially Loperfido, because he already was playing sporadically, and now Chaz McCormick is back, and he came back a couple of days ago. You know, Myers has been playing in center field, and Dubon is getting some time in left field as well and can play in the infield too. So I just wonder if – I got a feeling Loperfido gets optioned before the end of this weekend. He's just not playing, and with Chaz back – I can see them going different ways with that bench. And he hasn't played since this past Sunday. He played last Friday and Sunday against righties, and they started against a righty on Tuesday, didn't start there, and then lefties both Monday and Wednesday. He's just not starting, and that opportunity to start is shrinking quickly with Myers and McCormick and all of them back. So, yeah, I think he gets option. Beck is just way too aggressive. 38% K rate. As I mentioned, zero walks so far. His swing rate's about 10% above league average. First pitch swing rate about 15.5% above league average. Chris mentioned the contact rates as well. The power speed is nice, but you know, maybe there's going to be some similar issues as something like Brenton Doyle was dealing with last year. Now, Brenton Doyle has picked it up this year a bit, but maybe he's going to be a cheap source of power and speed, but the average is going to be pretty low. He's the one where I don't have as many question marks about the playing time moving forward. There's not a lot of other options there in Colorado, but I think he has the most question marks in terms of the profile for sure. And then with Pajes, he's still playing close to regularly, and he's the one where I do think he has the higher floor here and probably the most power upside, but it's the Dodgers here, so I almost wonder. Miguel Vargas is not playing much since he got called up, and Jason Hayward's back as well. So looking at Pajes here, he's still playing every day in center field. Hope that continues, but we shall see. So our next set of hitters here, we'll group these two together because, as I mentioned earlier, they are leading the American League in WAR right now with Colton Cowser of Baltimore and Willy Abreu with the Red Sox. We've talked Cowser a bit this year, so let's start with Abreu, who I don't think we've talked about in a good time now. So far, he's 24 years old, and we're just really quietly having a great season. He's 5 home runs and 7 steals so far in 157 plate appearances, slashing .275, .357, excuse me, .486, hard hit rate 47.5%, 11% barrel rate, walk rate 11.5% as well. So it's really, K rate's a little high, but not terrible. It's 25.5%. You live with that. That's actually better than what it has been for him in the past. Zone contact's a little below average, but not terrible. Same with overall contact. He's around 70% overall, 78% zone. He's, again, not the flashiest dude in the world, but getting the opportunity with all the injuries on the Red Sox, and I don't think this is going to change anytime soon. I think he's a kind of undervalued dynasty asset right now, Chris.
I do too. I think that he can be one of those guys that just gives you sneaky production. I bumped him to 250 in my dynasty ranks at the end of April, and I wondered if that was even too low, given that he does provide across the board. The steals are the interesting thing. Does he really run this much? I mean, he hadn't been caught this year. So 7 attempts, 7 stolen bases. That's been encouraging. He hits the ball hard. He hits the ball at ideal launch angles. A lot of barrels, a little above league average barrel rate at least. So that's a kind of an encouraging thing there. He's walking. He shows good plate discipline. The contact numbers they're respectable. They're not where you'd like to see them, but he makes up for it in the sense that he's not chasing a ton of pitches out of the zone. He's showing decent plate discipline. I do think that Abreu is one of those guys that just is a bit underrated and may stay underrated for a while. It wouldn't shock me if people don't really catch up to this, especially he has had some struggles in May, but still, he's still performing decently. 3 home runs, 4 doubles, some steals this month. So it makes up for the fact that he is hitting .226, but he's still getting on base, and he's still giving you some counting stats. I do think Abreu is a really solid bet just to keep producing. Maybe not flashy, but might just be somebody that provides a decent bit without people really realizing it.
Yeah, and so as a Red Sox fan, every day he just does something. It gets a hit here, steals a bag there. It's like he's ever, there's not many days so far that I believe that's been like, all right, he went like 0 for 4 and did nothing at the plate. He's always doing something, and it's been really a pleasant surprise and someone that Boston's really needed. Obviously, Cass is on the shelf right now. Rafaela has been more so struggling so far. Sheeta's on the IL. Story's in the IL. So they've really needed some offensive firepower to step up. And Connor Wong has as well, which has been great. So the unsung heroes of the team so far on the offensive side of things. But going over to Colton Cowser, it's been such an up and down roller coaster season for him. He started off really hot after terrible last year. Then he went through a really bad cold stretch and picked it up again. That's probably just what he's going to be. Look at the profile. The power's there. 16.3% barrel rate, 91.6 average exit velocity, 50% hard hit rate, solid sprint speed. So we know the upside's there, but at the same time, K rate's always been hovering right around 30%. Contact rates, zone 74.3. Overall, about 67.5%. So those there are going to keep him up and down. He'll be red hot for a few weeks, as he has been, and he'll go into a funk for a few weeks. Kind of just wonder if he's going to be one of those guys, not exactly like Christopher Morel, maybe a little bit like Morel, where, when he's hot, man, he's hot, and he's one of the best hitters in baseball for a period of time. But then you get the valleys as well. It'll be frustrating, but end of the season, this still could be a 25-plus homer, 12 to 15 steal type of guy, and the average will probably settle in around 260 or so. And he's still been starting pretty regularly. They haven't really benched him a lot, even during his struggles. They're still starting him for the most part, which shows their confidence in him. So yeah, I think Cowser's here to stay. I know there's a lot of guys knocking on the door, but Kierstead went back down. Mayo was out for several weeks with the broken ribs. As Chris mentioned, I don't think Holiday's back up anytime soon either. So I think Cowser's going to continue to get a long run here. And at this point, I think he's definitely in that top 100 dynasty discussion.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that we probably see some ups and downs from Cowser, and we've experienced that fully this year. Just the contact skills are fine. We'll say they're not, haven't been great at all this year, to be honest with you. The zone contact rate, you mentioned 74% is not good. The overall 67.5%, not good. And really, Cowser wasn't even a guy that had high contact rates in the minors. So it's not something like, oh, it's a guarantee to get better. But everything else, he's doing pretty well. He is hitting the ball quite hard. The quality of contact makes up for it a little bit. You still want to see him obviously make more contact. The chase rate is low, which is really good, and that's encouraging. So there's got to be a balance in all of it. I do think that we probably see him bounce back. He has not hit a home run in May, and you have to go back to April 22nd to when he hit his last home run, which is a little bit discouraging, because you're not getting much from the counting stat standpoint out of him. He's not stolen a base in May either. Sad thing is, you've had to sit, really, Cowser this month, or he's not giving you much of anything. I do think that he'll be back. I think that they've shown the confidence in him, which is good. Even in the midst of the struggles, he still played regularly, and I think that speaks to how the Orioles value him and that he's likely a mainstay moving forward unless something drastic happens.
Yeah, I think he is as well. And we'll see when some of these guys get back healthy, how things shake out there. I still think a trade can happen. And obviously, they just lost John Means again, so maybe they look to add a pitcher here. And they do have a couple guys in AAA with Povich and McDermott. But still wondering how what the long-term picture looks like. But for now, yeah, Cowser looks pretty locked into that picture. But moving over to some pitchers here, where else do we start than Paul Skenes? Obviously, he pitched again today on Thursday and still pitched well. Didn't have a lot of strikeouts, but can't knock a 2.25 ERA through his first three starts. Obviously, his second start was just absolutely phenomenal. I guess my question here is, how high do we push Skenes in terms of dynasty pitcher rankings? Because obviously, it's been a pretty big shakeup over the last, obviously this year, but even end of last year as well, with guys like McClanahan getting hurt, etc. Now Strider's on the shelf, and some top guys have struggled. Other guys are a bit older, like Wheeler and Nola, etc. But I put him at 3. I've seen him even put higher than that. I have Skubal 1, Burns 2, and then Skenes at 3, and it felt wrong at first, but I think I had him 7 or 8, and then I just kept looking ahead of him. Yep, I would take him over him. I'll take him over him. And I got him up to 3, and I'm like, all right, I think that's fine for now. It almost feels too high right now, but then you just watch Skeen's pitch, and you're like, nah, it's not too high. When he's hitting 100, he's already, second among starters in 100-mile-an-hour pitches thrown and, like, 7th overall. Mason Miller is, like, leading that category by a freaking mile. When you see him throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs, 94, his splitter averages 94.8 miles an hour. I don't have to look that up. That's probably the number one splitter velocity in all of baseball right now. Then he's got the mid-80s slider, and then he throws in the occasional changeup and curveball. But slider, 32% whiff rate. Splitter's at a 48% whiff rate. People can't touch the four-seam. No extra base hits allowed in that four-seam. He actually has the most strikeouts on the four-seam. He has over half of his strikeouts on that four-seam right now. Where do you have him in your dynasty pitcher rankings? Because, again, I put him 3. That felt too high, but again, watch him pitch, then it feels right.
No, I think that anywhere in that top 5 is fair. I've seen people say that he's probably number 1, which is crazy. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him that high or even 5th. I think that's probably a fair range to have him. How high is too high? I don't know. I don't think there is a such thing, but especially given the injury, I think in a normal year where a lot of the top guys don't get hurt, he doesn't get pushed that high. But the fact that he has Strider's going down, Yuri's going down, like Garrett Cole's going down, all the top guys have gone down. So it opens the door completely. You've got Skubal, who's looked really good, but he's got a shaky track record of health. And really, the performance has been a newfound thing with the new velo and such. I don't know. I think that you don't want to be too aggressive too soon, but it's hard to argue against what you've seen because everything acts it from a pitch level perspective. The eye test he passes, the performance, it all checks every box. I'm pretty excited to see what he does. I think that he could be the consensus number one guy by midseason if he continues to perform. I'll say that for sure.
It might be by this time next month. At this rate, obviously, Skubal has been dominant. Burns looked pretty damn good and has been one of the better, if not the best pitcher in all baseball for like the last half decade. But yes, Keynes is, he's must see TV. Like you tune in for, it doesn't matter if you're at work, at home, it doesn't matter. You tune in for a Paul Skeen start any way you can. And then his teammate in that rotation right now, Jared Jones, went from the guy to number 2 guy, but I put him top 10 too. When I was updating my dynasty rankings, I had him like 8 or 9 among pitchers, I should say. But again, it felt high at first, and then I started looking at it, and you watch Jones, and yeah, he had some comments when I posted that. Like, oh, he wasn't ranked even top 200 going in this year. And yeah, that's true. This was a guy that was a good prospect, but wasn't super high. He was top 100 in a lot of rankings, but it wasn't like he came into the year ranked near where Skeens was ranked. And to go from where he was as a prospect ranking to where he is now in a dynasty ranking, yeah, that's a massive jump for a guy with 10 starts and 59 innings under his belt. But at the same time, he passes the eye test of a top 10 dynasty pitcher. So you got 3.05 ERA, 0.97 whip, 4.3% walk rate, 29.4% K rate. He's like top 5, 6, 7 in K rate, KMS, BB, XFIP, Sierra, like a lot of categories there. And the fact that he can miss bats like he is and also show that he's top 5 in walk. I think he had the 3rd lowest walk rate among qualified arms or something like that. It was definitely top 5 or bottom, whatever, best 5, whatever you want to call that for walk rate. That's just phenomenal. And you look at some of the pitchers similar to him with some feel and movement, Hunter Green, Dylan Cease, G-Rod, Luis Gil. Jones is checking off all these boxes that you want to see. And yeah, I think a lot of it's legit. I don't think this is fluky. So again, it felt a little odd to put Jared Jones top 10, but I did. And maybe that's a little high. Maybe I'll eat my words there, but that's where I ended up on him. But what about you, Chris?
Yeah, he's been incredible to watch. And you mentioned like, the stuff has ticked up so much with Jones, and it's watching him 2 years ago, I didn't imagine that he would become this guy. I thought he would be a high leverage reliever, but the stuff is just incredible here. And it's just star over star. It's still been good. He's not as buzzy as he once was because he's regressed a little bit. And regression is him having a 2.88 ERA this month over four starts. So it's still been really good. He's still pitching deep into games. He's averaged over six innings a start this month, which is a major encouragement to me. I think that he's going to be really good for a long time. I think this is a top 10 starting pitcher, 22 years old doing this. Man, that'll play all day long.
Yeah, it's awesome. If you're a Pittsburgh fan, I know it's been a little rough there, and the lineup is still a bit rough. The guys are pretty struggling, like Cruz and Reynolds. But to add two guys like this into your rotation in the first month and a half of the season is a lot of fun. I'm tuning in. I'm sure obviously Pittsburgh fans are as well. But yeah, that's a fun rotation, at least at the top. But then you get Keller at your three. Keller is finally where he needs to be. I mean, Keller is like the epitome of a three. He was masquerading as a one because he had to, because nobody else was there that was any good. But now he's finally able to just be a three and let these two studs do their thing. But moving out of Pittsburgh, we got three more pitcher names here. All three are in the National League East. We'll start with Max Meyer. Came back after missing the entire 2023 season and pitched very well in those three outings. 2.12 ERA across 17 innings. 0.82 whip, 14 strikeouts, didn't strike out a lot of guys, but only a 4.6% walk rate. But then they sent him back down to AAA to manage his innings. And so it wasn't a big sample size here, but looked pretty good in those three outings here. And obviously coming off missing the entire year, but was one of the top pitching prospects in baseball before that. So what are your thoughts right now just on Max Meyer? Both he can still provide some impact later this season, Chris, and it's your long-term thoughts on him.
You never know what a guy's going to look like when they come back. And Meyer returned and looked like he had it. I think that they maybe shot his confidence a little bit by sending him down. He's not pitched well really at all in the minors. And it's weird to see after you dominate major leaguers and then the team's like, hey, you need to go back down and work on some stuff. And this was after a start where he blew through the Braves lineup. I know the Braves hitters haven't been the hottest this year, but still, this is a really good ball club. We're talking a 2.12 ERA across three starts with 14 strikeouts and three walks, and they sent him down. I look at what he's done since then, and it's not been great. He finally had a decent outing last week for the first time. It was just four innings, 5K, zero walks, one earned. He's not been going as deep into games because he's struggling. I think this was a confidence killer. And yeah, I don't want to accuse them of that or act like I've got any kind of insight here. But by the looks of it, I don't think you go from three really good major league starts to pitching like this in AAA because the talent level is not even close. And so, yeah, I think that long term, Meyer will be fine. I think Meyer's going to be a really good arm and one that can provide solid K, solid ratios just across the board, be really, really good because we saw the flashes of it. He was leading with the slider and it was working. He was missing bats. The fastball location was much better than we had seen in the past. And he was up, back around 95 again, which coming back from injury was huge. And the changeup, he was throwing more. And I thought that was going to be a sticking point was would he throw enough changeups to stick as a starter or would he be a two-pitch guy? And I think that he solidified that he will at least throw the changeup enough to left-handed batters, which is an encouragement to see. He throws both the slider and the four seam to both batters. So against lefties, you've got three pitches, righties, you've got two, but you can live with that. So I do think that long-term Max Meyer is going to be really good, but I think that unfortunately the organization, I think might've hurt him here.
Yeah. And it's not like there's a lot in his way at the major league level because their rotation, obviously it's got Luzardo back. That's great. But obviously Puck didn't work out. He's back in the bullpen. Trevor Rogers does not look good. Weathers has not looked as good as he did earlier on in the season. 6-0 is 6-0 and doing 6-0 things. And Braxton Garrett, it's been two starts, but he looked bad in those two starts. I think he'll be fine, but I think there's definitely opportunity. What are the odds that 6-0 Sanchez sticks in that rotation the rest of the year? Pretty slim. And again, Weathers has regressed, and Rogers just hasn't looked good for a while now and has looked pretty pretty mediocre, and that's putting it nicely so far this season. But yeah, Meyer, I'm a big fan of Meyer. I was a big fan of his coming out of the draft before he got injured. Had him as a top 10 pitching prospect. Obviously, the fastball has been always been really good, mid 90s. That slider's been phenomenal. That was classified as maybe the best breaking ball in that entire 2020 draft class. That was a pretty good pitching draft class as well. Obviously, a lot of talent there. And I think he'll get that opportunity again. Probably won't be anytime soon. More probably looking like July, maybe. But definitely a guy worth holding on to in dynasty leagues, and you know, maybe trying to trade for if he can or not. Because I think that value is only going to go up here over the next year or two. Next one here, Christian Scott had quality starts in each of his first two outings, including one against Chris's Atlanta Braves. Then allowed four earned in four innings in his last outing. But overall, still pretty good. 4.32 ERA in those three starts, 1.32 WHIP, 17 strikeouts in 16 and two-thirds innings, only four walks. We knew Scott's going to be a guy that's going to step it right in and be among the league leaders in lowest walk rate. I mean, he's always been there at 5.6% so far. He misses bats, and that's like the undervalued part of his game that he doesn't get enough credit for. Is he can miss bats, four-seam slider, sweeper, and splitter. All four of those pitchers can miss bats at times. You know, I think he's still going to be a very good arm. I've been very high on him for a while. He's my number six pitching prospect right now. And I think he's going to be a guy that's going to, you know, never be an ace for your fantasy team, but a guy that could probably settle in as like a top 25, top 30 pitcher and just consistently be there, and a guy that's going to be a reliable source of production for your team and probably always be a little bit undervalued. Yeah, I'm still incredibly high on Scott's. And I'm really excited to see what he continues to do here for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that he should be here to stay at this point, unless there's some just major fallout that happens and he just really struggles. But I know his start against the Marlins was not the best, but I do think that long-term, Scott's going to be a really good arm, and we'll see him bounce back in the next one. He should be pitching tomorrow, potentially, if I'm not mistaken. I need to look and see, but he should line up pretty soon. He threw last Friday and hasn't pitched since. Yeah, he lines up against Kyle Harrison tomorrow, so that should be a fun one. Two young arms. But no, look at Scott, and this is who he is, a guy that's going to command pitches really well. He's not going to overpower anybody. Even though the fastball is, you know, pretty solid, it's ticked up over the years, he locates it so well, and that's what causes it to play up. It's 95, but it's located so extremely well that he's going to miss bats. He's got to keep the slider down a little bit. I think that's really been the issue so far, is that hasn't located the slider the best. But at the end of the day, you look at what he offers, and it's going to be a really solid arsenal for a long time. And I do think that, yeah, I'd say he's here to stay, and one that I'm excited to see the rest of the season. Probably a pretty high floor arm that you can count on moving forward.
Yep, absolutely. Last arm here, going to Chris's Atlanta Braves with AJ Smith-Shaver, who just made his return to the major league rotation today on Thursday. So yesterday when you're listening to this, and pitched pretty well. Went to 4 1/3 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts against the Chicago Cubs. Who would have thought that the Bryce Elder experiment wouldn't go well? So I think you could see Smith-Shaver get some run here. Waldrop has looked really good, but I don't think they're going to go to Waldrop yet. Maybe that's July, August type of thing with him. But I think you could see some run here with AJ Smith-Shaver. And last year, overall, it was fine, a little bit up and down those 5 starts with the major league team, but maybe was rushed a little bit. I think we can all admit that. But given like the last 12 months or a little bit over for him, has been pretty much a whirlwind going from low. This time last year, what was he like, in low A or high A or something like that? So yeah, it's been kind of a whirlwind 12 months or 13, 14 months for AJ Smith-Shaver. So where are you at on him now, Chris? What are your long-term thoughts?
Stuff ticked up a lot this year, and I'm not sure he knew how to completely harness it. We saw that in this start. I'm going to look at where the fastball velo set, but he's been way up all year. He set 96.2, touched 99.3. That's up 2 ticks from last year, so obviously that's pretty notable. The curve, the change, both looked solid. Missed some bats with both of those pitches, especially the changeup. And I think that he's still learning like how to pitch. He hasn't been a pitcher that long when you think about it. He's still so young. And the fact, like you said, he was so rushed. He went from high A to start the 2023 season to the majors in the matter of 2 months. And I think this was probably around the time when he was getting that first call. They've really not done him a ton of favors. They put him in some spots that not great. They put him in the playoffs against the Phillies, which in Philly, not ideal. And then he has to go out in Chicago today, and he held his own. To go to Chicago in the Windy City and have to make that start is not easy to do because there's been bombs away this series for both teams. So especially Atlanta's been bombing. I know today was a 3-0 game, but still, I think that the Braves have just been in tough situations where you know they've had to put him in because, like you said, Elder, not good. No, everybody knew that it would not be good, but they're just mixing and matching due to injuries. Unfortunately, and this was one of the rotations that was supposed to be one of the better ones in baseball, and then injuries have hampered him a bit. So, no, I think that AJ will be fine long term. I just think that at the end of the day, like when a kid sees his stuff tick up 2 miles an hour, yeah, there's going to be some major differences. The changeup movement is a lot different than it was last year. So I think that he's going to have to work through those. But at the end of the day, yeah, I'm not worried. This is still a young pitcher, and he's going to get better. And does he stick in the rotation this year? We'll see. But I think that AJ Smith-Shawver probably fell into the buy low camp. Right now, is he still a buy low? I don't necessarily know, but I do think that he was in that camp for sure.
I think he's not like a glaring buy low, but I think he's still a solid buy low. But yeah, I think we're forgetting to mention the most notable thing that happened in the Atlanta game today. Not the return of AJ Smith-Shawver and that he pitched well, but Jared Kelnick went yard, baby. Nah, I'm kidding, of course. But that's a fun way to end the show. That will wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. It's been a fun first 7 weeks of the season in terms of rookies. And so we got a lot of baseball to be played and a lot more debuts on the way. Maybe Caminero comes back soon. James Wood looks like he's getting pretty damn close. We shall see. But thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.